The third-floor balcony had just enough room for the splintered table and 6 chairs. Despite the insane crowding on the main floors, stairs, and landings, no one had challenged them for the space after Loeski and Lamia threw the protesting death commandos over the railing and into the river 9 meters below. Somehow, Loeski had managed to send up a tankard of beer and a basket of bread and cold beef. The group ate in silence, obviously suffering more than the usual amount of post-fugue hunger, fatigue, and depression. The darkness of the balcony was relieved only by dim, reflected light from deeper within Cicero's, and by the lanterns on passing river barges. Most of the buildings along the Huli were dark, but other city lights reflected from low clouds. The consul could make out the ruins of the Shrike Temple, half a kilometer upriver. "Well," said Father Hoyt, obviously recovered from the heavy dose of ultramorph, and teetering on the delicate balance between pain and sedation. "What do we do next?" When no one answered, the consul closed his eyes. He refused to take the lead in anything. Sitting on the balcony at Cicero's, it was all too easy to fall back into the rhythms of a former life. He would drink until the early morning hours, watch the pre-dawn meteor showers as the clouds cleared, and then stagger to his empty apartment near the market. Going into the consulate 4 hours later, showered, shaved, and seemingly human except for the blood in his eyes and the insane ache in his skull. Trusting in Theo, quiet, efficient Theo, to get him through the morning. Trusting in luck to get him through the day. Trusting in the drinking at Cicero's to get him through the night. Trusting in the unimportance of his posting to get him through life.
"You are all ready to leave for the pilgrimage?"
The consul's eyes snapped open. A hooded figure stood in the doorway, and for a second the consul thought it was Head Mastin. But then he realized that this man was much shorter, his voice not accented with the stilted Templar consonants.
"If you are ready, we must go,"
said the dark figure.
"Who are you?"
asked Braun Lamia.
"Come, quickly,"
was the shadow's only reply. Fedmon Kassad stood, bending to keep his head from striking the ceiling, and detained the robed figure, flipping back the man's hood with a flick of his left hand.
"An android," said Lenar Hoyt, staring at the man's blue skin and blue-on-blue eyes.
The consul was less surprised. For more than a century it had been illegal to own androids in the hegemony, and none had been biomanufactured for almost that long. But they were still used for manual labor in remote parts of backwater, non-colony worlds, worlds like Hyperion. The Shrike Temple had used androids extensively, complying with the Church of the Shrike doctrine, which proclaimed that androids were free from original sin, therefore spiritually superior to humankind and, incidentally, exempt from the Shrike's terrible and inevitable retribution.
"You must come quickly,"
whispered the android, setting his hood in place.
"Are you from the temple?"
"Quiet!"
snapped the android. He glanced into the hall, turned back, and nodded.
"We must hurry. Please, follow me."
All of them stood and then hesitated. The consul watched as Kassad casually unsealed the long leather jacket he was wearing. He caught the briefest glimpse of a death wand tucked in the colonel's belt. Normally, the consul would have been appalled by even the thought of a death wand nearby. The slightest mistake in touch could puree every synapse on the balcony. But at this moment, he was oddly reassured by the sight of it.
"Our luggage?"
began Weintraub.
"It has been seen to,"
whispered the hooded man.
"Quickly, now!"
The group followed the android down the stairs and into the night, their movement as tired and passive as a sigh. The consul slept late. half an hour after sunrise, a rectangle of light found its way between the porthole's shutters and fell across his pillow. The consul rolled away and did not wake. An hour after that, there came a loud clatter as the tired mantas which had pulled the barge all night were released and fresh ones harnessed. The consul slept on. In the next hour, the footsteps and cries of the crew on the deck outside his stateroom grew louder and more persistent. But it was the warning klaxon below the locks at Carla which finally brought him up out of his sleep. Moving slowly in the drug-like languor of fugue hangover, the consul bathed as best he could with only basin and pump, dressed in loose cotton trousers, an old canvas shirt, and foam-soled walking shoes, and found his way to the mid-deck.